Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much. Welcome back to the Book Versus Movie podcast, and this is Margot D. Normally, I co-host the show with the illustrious Margot P., but this is a special mini bonus ep, and we're talking about Stephen King here. And normally, what we do is we take one Stephen King story, a screenplay, a novella, short story, or a novel, and then we talk about the movie version of it, and I talk with another podcaster so you guys can meet your fellow podcasters out in the universe. Well, this is going to be different today. Because this is Juliet Miranda, and Juliet hosts a show called The Unwritable Rant Podcast, which you all should subscribe to. And she and I had a great time talking about a year and a half ago about the book and movie Rosemary's Baby. So I asked her if she wanted to meet for a drink over Skype and just talk about two different Stephen King stories. I would pick one, she would pick one, and we just kind of chat about it. So it's a little more informal, and I hope you guys enjoy that. The two stories we're going to be discussing today are the novella, The Breathing Method, and the short story, You Know, They Got a Hell of a Band. And we'll talk about this in this episode. Thank you so much. And please feel free to follow us on all of our social media. Everything is at Book Versus and Movie. That's on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We have a Facebook group. You ask to join by typing in Book VS Movie Podcast Group, and you ask to join. We do have an email. It's bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And we do have an Audible connection, and there are tons of Stephen King books that are available on Audible. And if you want to try it out, the service for yourself, one free audiobook and a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service, go to audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. All right, you guys, this is a very special Stephen King, I'm going to call this story time, bonus ep. This is Margot D. Me and Juliet Miranda. So welcome to the show, Juliet.
Hi. Oh, it's great to be talking to you again.
I love talking to you so much. Please tell everybody in the audience about your show. Please, please, please.
Of course. So I'm Juliet Miranda, and I am the host of the Unwritable Rant podcast, where I tell stories, my stories, celebrity interviews. It is a bourbon-soaked adventure.
And you always have like a different bourbon that you're talking about or different whiskey?
Every episode, I like to start with a toast and talk a little bit about whatever bourbon I'm drinking that week.
So why don't we start right now? What are you drinking?
I am drinking Blood Oath Pact Number 4, and It is a blended bourbon that's 12 years old, and it is amazing.
Okay, so I'm just about to open up my can. I have actually canned wine. It's from Underwood. It's
canned wine.
I love canned wine. No, I'm not kidding you. This is Underwood, and it's a Pinot Noir.
Okay, so... Wow. I have never had canned wine. I've had boxed wine, and it makes me a little sad. So
canned is actually
canned wine good.
You know what? Somebody told me that works at a vineyard that actually bought the cork in bottles hurts the wine. And it's actually better to have in a different kind of container. And I like something like this because you can just take it to the park and you don't.
And is it an aluminum can? I can't imagine that wouldn't like react with the wine somehow.
It's an aluminum can and it tastes amazing.
Crazy.
So cheers.
Cheers.
So before we get into our stories, we're going to trade stories today. I want to ask you, what is your history with Stephen King? Is he one of your favorite writers, or what goes on with you with Stephen King?
I would never call Stephen King one of my favorite writers, but he is someone that I admire because he has such a great ability to develop characters. And what I love most about him is the way that he's able to make the internal struggle somebody feels in a situation as big of a monster as anything else in the book.
That is so well put. Do you have a favorite book or story, or is the one you're telling today going to be your favorite?
Well, what I'm talking about today is my favorite short story of his, but my favorite book is The Shining.
Excellent. And what is your favorite adaptation?
Oh, gosh. You know, Stephen King just doesn't translate. And it's for the same reason. I just feel like half of the scary stuff that happens, happens on the inside. And that's so hard to adapt.
I totally agree. But I mean, I like Shawshank Redemption personally. I think that's a little, really well realized. But
yeah. And Misery, I think, came out incredibly well, too.
Yeah. And Dolores Claiborne, that's a pretty good one, too.
Definitely.
And what would you ask him if you met him in person?
I'd ask him what's going on in his basement.
Ooh.
And well, I say that for two reasons. One, it, obviously basements are creepy, but in his book on writing about how to be a writer, he always talks about going down to his personal basement, and that's where his stories come from. So I'd just be curious what was, you know, kind of percolating in there.
All right. And then so today I'm going to be talking about The Breathing Method, which is from Different Seasons, and you're going to be talking about...
You Know They Got a Hell of a Band, and it's from Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
I love it. Okay, so I'm going to go first. I'm going to talk about it. This is The Breathing Method, and it's from Different Seasons. And this is one of my favorite books that it came out. It came out in 1982, and it's between The Dark Tower, The Gunslinger, and Christine. And the other stories in here are Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption, which became The Shawshank Redemption, Apt Pupil, which became a movie as well.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, it's amazing. And then The Body, which became Stand By Me. And I co-host a podcast called Book Versus Movie, and my co-host, Margot P., does not like horror stories at all. And I've told her, we've discussed Stephen King before, and I told her this particular story, The Breathing Method, I forbid her to ever, not to listen to this episode, not to read it on Wikipedia. I read this when I was maybe 16 years old. And Juliet, I didn't read it again until I prepped for the show. Because for years, it haunted me. And I don't know if it was just the age and my hormones were going crazier or whatever. But this story so completely freaked me out. So I hope I'm not doing too much of a buildup, by the way. But
all right, I'm braced. I'm braced.
I'm going to take a sip and then I'm going to tell you about it. Okay, picture it. Mm. New York City. And it's the mid-70s. And there's a guy named David, and he works at a law firm, and he wants to be made partner. So he kind of has to join this men's club, and it's the 70s. It's truly a men's club. It's just dudes, no women allowed. And what they do to pass the time is they trade stories, you know, creepy stories, weird stories, or whatever. And it's close to Christmas, and he becomes friends with a guy named, I love that Stephen King has the best names for people. Ever, ever, ever. It's Dr. Emlyn McCarron. E-M-L-Y-N. Emlyn McCarron. And he is an obstetrician. And he's based on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And he talks about in the early 1930s, he had a patient come in. And she was tall, blonde, beautiful. And her name was Sandra Stansfield. And she comes in and she's not wearing a wedding ring. And she says to him, look, in my mid-20s, I'm single, I have no family, I'm pregnant, it's the 30s, I am basically screwed. But I am going to have this baby and I'm going to give him up for adoption. And I want you to be my doctor. And he's feeling kind of uncomfortable, like this woman coming in out of his practice. It's just the time that it is. And she said, I have saved so much money that I am going to pay you in advance. She says, I've always been thrifty, but I put this money aside that I'm going to pay you for all my doctor's visits for the next like 6 to 9 months or however far along she is. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy. And he said, okay. And I said, all right, so tell me your story. So she is a girl from the Midwest. She moves to New York to be an actress. And, you know, she works at a department store and she sells perfume and that's what she's doing. And she's terribly lonely and she doesn't have any family and she doesn't really know a lot of people. So what happens? She joins this acting group and she sleeps with a goddamn actor, which you don't do. You and I know this.
No, that is nothing but trouble.
It is always a bad move. So he gets her pregnant. And so the doctor agrees to take her on because he finds her very alluring. She's very self-assured. She's not weepy. You know, she's very self-contained. She's a self-possessed woman. And he really, you can tell he's kind of in love with her, but he's also kind of status conscious. So he agrees to take her in and he says, okay, but he wants to try something new with her. Basically, he wants her to take prenatal vitamins and then he wants her to practice what he calls the breathing method. which like 20 years later, the Lamaze method comes out. And I've never had kids. Have you had kids?
Nope, not at all.
Yeah, same here. So basically, people know about Lamaze now and about the breathing. If you've ever seen it in a movie, you know, it's sure. the deep breathing or the ch-ch-ch, you know, all that dumb crap.
Right, right.
He's teaching her how to do that. And she's like, why am I doing this? He says, because this is going to help you keep you calm. It's going to keep you centered. And he was just talking about, at the time, women would go to the hospital, and it was such, like, it's such a crazy, they portray this in movies all the time. Like, women go to the hospital to give birth, and you just think a bomb exploded in the hospital. Like,
right, all you hear is screaming.
Oh, my God, and, you know, yeah, get the gurney yeah. over here, do this, do that. And he says that, you know, you can calm yourself down, and you can help yourself. You have that strength within yourself to help you get through this without going through all that odds and all that craziness. She's like, okay. So every month she comes in for her appointment and they do these breathing exercises. And he gets to know her a little bit better and a little bit better. And she's going along and she starts to show. And her boss at the department store, well, here she is. She's a woman in her 20s. She's not married. She doesn't have a wedding ring. And she's obviously pregnant. So she gets fired.
Uh-oh.
Right. And that's what he says. And so what she does with the severance pay is she buys a wedding band and she leaves her apartment. She goes, because she knows she's going to get kicked out of that apartment as well. And she moves downtown in the village and she works for a blind lady. And she tells the woman, I was married, but my husband was killed in a car accident. And I have no money. Can I please work for you? This woman needs help with like light housekeeping and to read stories to her. So she gets this job. She's very resourceful. Like, she never freaks out, and she can mm-hmm. always handle herself. And she starts to tell the doctor, like, whenever I get upset or I get angry or I feel confronted, I just practice my breathing exercises. And she goes, and it looks crazy to people, but it really works. It keeps her calm. And then one day he has like a really bad dream about her. And he feels like, and he wakes up and he's like totally worried about her. He tells her about the dream and she's like, please, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. So she's due like December 10th or something. She's still like 3 weeks later. It's almost Christmas Eve. She still hasn't had the kid. And all of a sudden she goes into labor. So she calls a cab and it had been snowing all goddamn day. So by the time she gets in, the cab takes forever to get to her apartment. And as they're driving through New York, it's getting icier and scarier. And she's in the back seat mm-hmm. and the cab, and all of a sudden she's practicing her breathing in the back of the cab to keep herself calm. And that really like deep inhale, exhale, and then the shh, shh, shh. And the cabbie gets freaked out because right. he can't understand what the hell this woman is doing. And she's like, just get me to the hospital. Get me to the hospital. So the doctor's on the way there as well. So as she gets to the hospital, the cab flips over right in front of the hospital. And the doctor sees this as he's running out to meet her cab. She gets thrown from the cab. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he starts running towards her. And then all of a sudden he realizes he kicks something and he doesn't know what it is. And he looks down and it's her head.
Oh, God.
It's her decapitated head. And her pregnant ass body is like lying nearby.
Oh,
and he's
God.
Like, holy shit, what do I do? What do I do? And all of a sudden he's looking at her body and he realizes her body is breathing deeply. Doing
wow.
the inhale and then
yeah.
the exhale.
Yeah.
Then the inhale, then the exhale. And then he looks over at her head and her mouth is moving like she's breathing.
Oh, my God.
So he goes to the body. He's like, this is what I do. I guess I give birth. So all of a sudden he's like yelling. He's cursing and yelling at everybody. He's like, bitch, get over here. Help me with this thing. And you grab that and you do that. And the baby is born. And he picks up and it's a boy. And he goes over to her head and says, hey, congratulations.
Look.
You have a son.
Well done.
And she looks at him and says, thank you, doctor. But he can hear it from the body, but her mouth is moving.
Wow.
Holy shit. I know. So in the end, the kid gets adopted. And he, for some reason, is able to keep up with this kid. And it turns out the boy grows up in a family in Maine. He's like an only child. He's well-loved. He's super successful. But this guy was kind of just so freaked out by this. Like, he remained a bachelor. He never had a family of his own. And basically, and that's kind of just how the story ends. Like, he just,
wow. I know. That's classic Stephen King.
It really is. It really is. Because he's developing these characters and you really care about them. But then you're like, but you're Stephen King. Where's the scary shit? And then all of a sudden, she gets decapitated. This freaked me out so bad.
That unexplained phenomenon of the fact that she's been decapitated and that she's still, you know, so committed to this birth that it's happening. That is what I love about him, is when he pulls those unexpected things out like that.
So there you go, Juliet. That's my story for you today. It's
good,
the breathing method.
Story.
Thank you. Okay, so tell me about your story.
All right. Well, this is, it's, you know, they got a hell of a band, and it's from Nightmares and Dreamscapes. And it's everything that I love about Stephen King. It starts out with this couple, and they're married, they're on a road trip, and they're struggling. You know, they're mm-hmm. taking this road trip so that they can kind of reconnect with each other. And the entire time they're arguing, they can't seem to find the right connection to each other. And, you know, he's talking about his past and she's trying to talk about their future, and they just can't seem to make this work. Mm-hmm. And they're driving. And the guy is just like this, you know, hardcore, I know what I'm doing, I know where I'm going kind of guy. And of course, he gets lost.
Of course.
So they're, you know, they're stuck out there in the middle of the woods. I think they're up in like outside of Portland somehow. And she's saying, we need to turn around. This is weird. You know, there are no telephone lines. I don't see any power lines. I'm not feeling good about this.
And
he's
so crazy.
Saying, this is fine. This is fine. We'll cut through. We'll get to the highway. No problem. And they keep going, and she falls asleep. And when she falls asleep, she has one of those sort of uncomfortable dreams where nothing really specific happens, but it's just not right.
Okay.
So she wakes up. She's completely unsettled, and the car is stopped, and he's standing in the middle of the road. And she comes out, and she's like, what's going on? And he's like, well, I think I found a town. And she's like, what town is that? And he points with a sign and it says, welcome to rock and roll heaven. And she says, that's not a town. That can't be real. No place is called rock and roll heaven. And when she says that, a bus passes them, and it's like a 1960s psychedelic kind of bus. And it's got hippies in it. And they're all, you know, hanging out the window going, we love you, you know, peace. And he's all excited about this. And he's like, wow, this looks really cool. We got to go through.
Oh shit.
And his wife is like, no way. Nuh-uh. Up, turn this car around, we'll go back. And this prompts a fight between the two of them, because he doesn't want to go back. He wants to see this through. He's charmed by the town. And they're just like head to head.
You know what? I'm sorry to interrupt you. You know, this is mm-hmm. the same thing with Children of the Corn. It's a
yes.
husband and wife, and they're fighting, and he's lost. And she's like, dude, you're lost. We got to turn around. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fighting couples in his stories. And it's funny because he's been married to the same woman for like 50 years. And they seem to have a great relationship. There's a lot of
right.
angry couples in his work. Continue.
I know. But he understands how to really build up the tension between
oh, yeah.
these people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and everything is just feeling wrong about the situation. And the guy is ignoring it completely. So, of course, you know, he bargains with her. He says, look, let's just go. We'll go into town. You know, we'll get a souvenir and then keep going. He's like, come on, don't you want a T-shirt that says I was in rock and roll heaven?
So oh, yeah,
like,
that's a thing.
Fine. Yeah, I know. Exactly. Cool. That's just what I wanted. So, you know, they keep driving. They head into town, and it is like a Norman Rockwell painting. It is the most picturesque town that you can imagine. You know, little houses. It's straight out of the 50s, you know, like the downtown scene in Back to the Future.
Or Pleasantville?
Yes, it's just like Pleasantville. It seems absolutely perfect. And the entire time, this woman is so unsettled. She can't get over the fact that she doesn't see any power lines. She doesn't see any phone lines, you know, and she's looking at these people and they all seem vaguely familiar to her. And she can't place why. And she's like, we just have to keep driving. And of course, the guy's like, no way, let's stop at this diner. And it's this little diner, you know, it's got the you know, cherry red booths and a huge jukebox in the corner. And they go in and this perky waitress is all, hey, you know, you need to try Ricky's cherry pie. And the guy's like, all right, I'm in. And the wife is like, no, I want a Coke. Let's just go. And it's so uncomfortable. And so they're sitting there and the waitress comes out. And that is when the woman realizes the waitress is Janis Joplin.
I love it.
And she is just blown away because she sees a picture of her hanging over the jukebox. And she's like, "That it can't be Janis Joplin. It just can't." And so, you know, she nudges her husband. She's like, "That's Janis Joplin." He said, "No way, not at all." But then the cook comes out from around the counter and it's Ricky Nelson.
Holy shit.
He's like, "Are you enjoying my pie?" And the husband is like, "Absolutely. This is delicious. This is the best thing I've ever eaten. I love it here. This is great." And the wife is just trying to angle her way out of there. So the guy goes off. He's checking out the jukebox. The little, you know, door behind them dings, and in comes someone else. It's Buddy Holly.
What?
And you don't know whether to be excited about this because you're like, oh my God, it's everybody. It's Buddy Holly. It's Ricky Nelson. This is so cool. And he starts talking to the woman. And as he does, the corner of his eye starts to bleed. Just a little trickle of blood dripping down from the corner of his eye that
Buddy
he does
Holly?
Nothing about. Buddy Holly.
Oh, shit.
Bleeding from the eye.
Okay.
No explanation for it. He does nothing about it. And the woman sees this and she says, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And as she's kind of backing up, right, there's this other waitress in there. And she slides her a cocktail napkin. And on it, she's written, get out. So she, you know, she's looking at this napkin. She's looking at the waitress who's trying to, like, you know, look busy and everything while Janis Joplin and the others are kind of like, you know, talking up the town and how great it is and how they should stay forever. And her husband comes back over. She tries to slide the cocktail napkin over to him. Like, look at this. This is the reason we need to get out of here. And of course, he just like wipes his mouth off with it.
Of course.
Right. He's not looking at it. But then it starts to get a little weird. You know, they're backing out and she's trying to pull him out and everything. And as she does, Janis starts to kind of like lose her facade. You know, at first she looks all perky and rosy, the perfect embodiment of Janis Joplin. But then she just vomits up a bunch of maggots.
No.
Right there on their feet.
Ew.
It is the single most disgusting scene ever. I mean, it's just, it's foul. And then that, the guy sees that and he's like, okay, that's not normal.
Can we leave now, honey? Get your goddamn
finally,
t-shirt.
Yeah. Now he's like, all right, now I'm ready to get the hell out of this town. So they run back in the car, you know, he guns the engine. They start to try and drive away. But all of a sudden now, like the town rock and roll residents, they're onto them and they want them to stay. So all of a sudden, like Greg Allman jumps in front of the car and tries to slow them down. Otis Redding, the police officer, is on their tail now, and they're trying to like chase them down. And they get stuck right at the far edge of town where that hippie tour bus is, and they crash right into it. And now they have no way out of town.
Holy shit.
And that's when the mayor of the town pulls up. Elvis Presley.
Of course.
Of course. Who else would be the mayor of
exactly,
rock and roll heaven?
Exactly. Nixon probably deputized him.
And he is just swaggering up and looking cool. And he says, y'all need to stick around because we got a hell of a show tonight. And then he starts talking up the town and saying, I don't think y'all are going to leave. We'll give you jobs. And he starts talking to the woman. He's like, there's a place for you at the beauty bar. You know, he's looking at the guy, we need a stock boy in the grocery store. And they're both like, we can, you know, we've got jobs, we have lives. And he's like, not anymore, you don't.
Holy crap.
And they get pulled back into the town. And you see this big town square where there's this little, like, you know, kind of town amphitheater. And it says concert tonight. And they have to sit there and wait for the concert to begin. And as they do, the waitress from the diner comes out. She's the one who slid her the cocktail napkin saying, get out. And she has this big bandage wrapped around her hand. And it turns out that she's dating Richie Valens.
Oh, yeah.
And he cut off her finger because she tried to tell them to get out. And then it's revealed that all these rock and roll stars come to rock and roll heaven, but they're different than they were in life. They're not the nice rock and roll guys anymore. Now they're just bad. And they have trapped all the original residents of the town here for one purpose. And that is an endless concert.
Oh, my God.
It's insane. Just like the terror that they start to feel when they realize they're never going to get out. But not only that, the music will never end.
So it's like purgatory.
Yes.
Holy shit. And that's how it ends?
That's how it ends.
You know,
with a never-ending concert.
Did you ever see they had a TBS or TNT had Nightmares and Dreamscapes, they had a TV series?
And they made this one into one of the episodes of it, but it's not very good.
No. I remember seeing it a long time ago, and I like Steven Weber.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's in there and a couple of other people. But you know, it's another thing about Stephen King. Like, he has this great idea, but it's like, but what do you do with it? But I kind of like the way he's ending it now that I think about it. That is kind of a fun way to end it.
Well, and you know what? For me, it resonated with me so strongly because having worked in the music industry and having gone to concerts, and sometimes music can be the most tedious thing in the world. You know, you're at this concert and like, all right, there's one encore after another. And it feels like it's never going to end. So for me personally, just knowing that there is this like eternal rock concert in the sky is terrifying.
You know, for me, when I lived in California, on top of that, you had to drive to the goddamn thing. So you had to drive to the thing.
Right.
And then there's a band before the band. And they're usually somebody I don't care about. And then the band comes on. And I'm one of those people, like, I go to a party for a while and then I got to leave. You know, I never linger too long. So,
yeah.
So like that would be hell for me. Like if I had to keep staying and staying and staying. And then on top of that, in California, when you leave, you're stuck in the damn parking lot forever.
Well, it's like that with every amphitheater. I mean, I think all over the country, you know, just trying to get out of this nightmare. It's just what it is. And that's why I think that this particular story really works better on paper than it does anywhere else, because you can't visualize that. You know, you really have to just picture it in your head as you're reading it.
So do you know this comes from a collection called Shock Rock?
I know that book. Absolutely.
I love that book. I have it in my hands right now. So there's actually a story I think is even better than this one. I just like the concept. Can I tell it to you really quick?
Sure.
Okay. So it's about Bob Dylan. And let me read the title. It's Bob Dylan, Tony Johnson, and the Speed Queen. And it's from F. Paul Wilson. And I don't know if you remember this, but it's about this guy who lives in the future, and he works at a company that can make time travel. Like they figured out time travel. And his big thing, but the thing is, once you go back in time, you can't go forward again, right? So whatever time you pick, you're stuck. And so he decides, I'm going to be Bob Dylan. So he memorizes every Bob Dylan song, how to play it, how to sing it. And then he goes back to like 6 months before Bob Dylan shows up in Greenwich Village. And he starts working the coffee houses, and he kind of blows his wad because he kind of plays like the 10 best songs like the first night or something. And so so people freak out, and he actually becomes really big right away. And then Bob Dylan shows up and he's furious, and he follows this guy. He goes, I know you're stealing my work. And he goes, I don't know how you do it, but you're stealing my ideas. Because I know that's my song in the future. Like, I've been thinking about these songs since I was a kid. You're a thief.
Wow.
I know who you are. And the guy's kind of like, oh, no. Yeah, bye. And one of the things he does I think is really stupid is he brings back with him records. And he brings back in time. I know, right? And then the other thing that he didn't count on was loneliness. And that you go back to another time, you have no past. You really don't have a present or future. You're just kind of existing. So he gets super lonely. So he falls in love with a girl that's a speed queen. And she finds his records. And then all of a sudden, he kind of like has to keep her happy so she doesn't blab. But at the same time, Bob Dylan is following him all around Greenwich Village. And it's just haunting him.
That's crazy.
Oh, it's the best story. It's so, so cool. But yeah, I love stories like that. But and when they insert like famous people into like a totally crazy situation.
Right. Well, yeah, and I love that Stephen King does it every so often. If you read, I think it's the unabridged version of The Stand.
Oh, yes.
Jim Morrison pops up in it.
I know. I love that scene.
Which I think is genius. I love little, you know, playbacks like that. Yeah.
I love that little stuff, too. Well, this was really fun.
Absolutely. This was a blast.
So can you tell everybody once again where they can find you?
Absolutely. Just go to theunwritablerant.com and you'll find the podcast there. You'll find links to my book and my essays, and also to the merch store where we have Unwritable Rant flasks and t-shirts and all sorts of good stuff.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Book Versus Movie podcast. We are a part of the Electronic Media Collective. We follow the hashtags Potter and Family and Lady Pod Squad. And we record all of our shows on the Zoom Handy H4N, donated to us by our friend Nick at the Dependent Independent Podcast.
Every day, 40,000 men and women 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 every day,